Welcome. You're listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. I'm Ron Fraser. Today we'll hear the second part of Jack McCants' talk on the power of prayer. I hope you enjoy it.
Do any of you know and hear this quotation we put in so many in front of our intone on my servant, the verses of God? Some of you are nodding yes. Can you quote it? Can you? Come up here, dear. Come on. Can you quote it? Yeah, you. Come on. Don't shake your head like a turkey and not gobble. Come on. Let's go. Come on. You say that. Recite this right here. Intone, O my servant, right here.
Intone, O my servant, the verses of God that have been received by thee, as intoned by them that have drawn nigh unto him, that the sweetness of thy melody may kindle thy own soul and attract the hearts of all men. Whoso reciteth in the privacy of his chamber the verses revealed by God, the scattering angels of the Almighty shall scatter abroad the fragrance of the words uttered by his mouth, and shall cause the heart of every righteous man to throb. Though he may at first remain unaware of its effect, yet the virtue of the grace vouchsafed unto him must needs, sooner or later, exercise its influence upon his soul. Thus have the mysteries of the revelation of God been decreed by virtue, by the will of him who is the source of power and wisdom. Baha'u'llah.
Now, I think the hand of the cause, Mr. Kadim must have picked her because he used to have a great memory himself. And I know when he was getting older and ill, it bothered him. It beginning to fail a little. It's not many people can do that, so we're grateful. Let me tell you a story I ran into as an example of that. This little town, this young lady had married this young Persian boy. She was Muslim, he was Baha'i, and they got married in Iran. And because the young girl was much loved by her family, as a wedding gift, the family gave her some gems, jewels, that had been in the family for several generations. And they were really good jewels, nice jewels, expensive. And it was unusual, but the Muslims gave permission for the daughter to marry this Baha'i. And so they moved to the United States, and he went into business. And over time, he was very successful, and they had two beautiful children in their marriage. She met with the Baha'is, went to some Baha'i meetings, liked the Baha'is, liked it, but she was not interested in changing at all. Not at all. And as often happens, misfortune hit their life. He lost his entire business. He went bankrupt. They ran out of money. You know, many of our Persian friends in this country have relatives. When they hit hard times, often the relatives help them out. They didn't have any relatives to help them out. And she was desperate. And she learned about this old American tradition, a pawn shop. They don't have them in Iran. So in desperation, because they had to keep a house over their head and some food on the table for their kids, she goes to the pawn shop and pawns her family gems to take care of her family. While her husband, in desperation, running hither and thither every day, trying to find work, and still he was unsuccessful. But he kept trying. Finally, pawn shop operator called her and said, "Ma'am," says, "you've got to have your money here at 9 a.m. in the morning or the gems are mine." You know, they only loan you about 10% or something like that. And she was in shock. I wish I could tell you her name, but I promised I wouldn't. She was in desperation, friends. Nowhere to turn. Her husband was looking for a job. He wasn't there. Going to lose everything. The loss of faith, her own self-respect, everything gone. In desperation, she took the picture of the master that we have and put it on a little TV set in her room. And on each side of that photograph, she put a picture of each one of her children, and she fell on her knees, bless her heart, and began to pray to Abba Baha. She cried and she begged and she prayed to Abba Baha to save them before it was too late. In the middle of her prayers, in the middle of her tears, the phone rings. She answers the phone. And it's a lady that she hadn't seen in 8 years. Now, this Persian lady was a seamstress, sewed beautiful garments. 8 years before, she had sewed some beautiful dresses for this lady's mother that was on the phone. She was an actress on the stage. Her mother had been. Now, this young lady that was on the phone was in the hospital with her mother, the lady that had had the dresses made. And she said, "My mother asked me to call you to see if you're all right. I had trouble locating you. We didn't know where you were. Are you all right?" And she was embarrassed. She said, "Well, yes, yes, we are. You know how you do." And her mother, now get this, friends, her mother is lying in the hospital bed, has had both legs amputated to the knee. She has tubes down her throat. She can't talk. She has a little laptop computer in her lap, the bed back of it. You know how they can do a hospital bed and roll it up a little and sit up a little. And she had typed in there, you know, that this lady was in trouble. You've got to find her and call her. Now, the lady was not a Baha'i. She was not a Muslim. She was not a Christian. She was a Jew. "Intone, O my servant, the verses of God." Any righteous heart throbbing with this. And so she types on her computer when the girl says everything's fine. She said, "No, that's not true. Make her tell the truth. Make her tell the facts." And so her daughter speaks to this young Persian lady and says, "My mom is typing on this little laptop computer. And she says, you're not telling us the truth. You've got to tell us what's really wrong. She knows something's wrong. I don't know how, but she knows." And so the Persian lady began to cry and to sob, and she told her the truth. The Jewish lady lying in her hospital bed types on her computer, "Don't worry. My daughter will be at your home in the morning with the money you need to pay off the pawn shop. And you don't have to worry about taking care of the debt till you're able to do it." The next morning, she was there. She paid off the debt that day. Her husband got a job that day, and she became a Baha'i that day. "Intone, O my servant, the verses of God." There's no limit to this power. There's no limit to this power. It's out here for any of us. Beloved Guardian says there are waiting souls in every town, but you must pray for them to find them. Friends, we need to learn to pray. We need to learn to have faith. We need to trust Baha'u'llah. Just take him at his word. He said, "Let the doubter arise and prove these assertions to himself." There's no limit to this. It's here for all of us. Now, those of you who live here are very fortunate because you have access to a place that was approved by the Master himself for being the greatest teacher in this country, this temple. And he says this, "From the Mashraq al-Askar, ordained as a house of worship by Baha'u'llah in the Kitab-i Aqdas, the representatives of Baha'i communities, both local and national, together with the members of their respective committees, will, as they gather daily within its walls at the hour of dawn." I didn't write this. This is the Guardian's writing. "Will, as they gather daily at the hour of dawn, derive the necessary inspiration that will enable them to discharge in the course of their day-to-day exertions in the Hazrat al-Quds, the scene of their administrative activities, their duties and responsibilities as befits the chosen stewards of his faith." You want to see this faith grow? Pray. Here. Now you can say, Jack, you're too little minded. You better believe it. We have a prayer that says, say this prayer for new believers or trying to find them at midnight. And everybody runs around and plays raises at 10 or 10:30 or 11. If you had cancer and your doctor told you to take that medicine at midnight, you'd be right on the dot looking at that clock. Pray it His way, not your way. Give it a chance. I'm sure most of you do. But young people out here haven't. You know, you've got all these teachings. Don't take anything for granted in this faith. I've came up high and no one told me anything about this repetition business. Jack, you should say Alabha 95 times. The first thing that occurred to me, why is God deaf? Well, all the Persians know better than that, but I wasn't Persian. 95 times, Alabha, Alabha. You know, like a Buddhist prayer circle, you know. Put it on a tape and play it. Why me do it, huh? Long healing prayer, over and over and over and over and over and over, same thing. Tablet of the Holy Mariner, over and over and over and over and over, same thing. Even when you die, oh my gracious, even when you die, you got someone standing at your grave and make everybody else stand up. We will all verily abide by the will of God. We will all verily abide by the will of God. And you start through it 19 times. You watch the mortician, they start shifting their feet. Because nobody thinks to tell them why you're doing it. And as soon as you finish that, you start in on another refrain for 6 times. Why? That's a fair question. Now, I have the answer here because I wrote the House of Justice. I couldn't find nothing. I don't have time to read it to you, but I bet you'd like to see it, wouldn't you? Now, I'll give you a brief version of it, and I like it very much. It's not in what they wrote, but Rahil Kanum said it's like driving a nail home. You hit it one time, it won't go in. It's not that God doesn't hear, you don't hear. It's you that doesn't hear. You know, we are so corroded over with our attachments to death, with grief, and all this loss. You become a Baha'i and they give you this prayer, the obligatory prayer, the long healing prayer. And the tablet of Amun. And it's endowed with a special potency. Who ever heard of such thing as that? Come off of it. The same manifestation of God revealed that did reveal as others. Why has it got so much kick to it than the others? Come on, ask yourself the question. It's not going to bite you. One of the months of our 19-month calendar is questions. It's a fair question. Why? Well, there's an answer to that. Don't you wish you knew it? There's an answer to these questions. These kids ask these wonderful questions, and we have answers to all of them. This is a faith of questions and answers. You see. And everything makes sense. Now, Mr. Dunbar has a wonderful teaching for his classes for youth over there. He says, you know, the Baha'i teachings are like a huge mosaic. You know, you can't just take one little piece out. Have you ever seen a jigsaw puzzle? If I just gave you one piece, it wouldn't make much sense. You've got to see the big picture. So everything fits together in our faith. All of it does. Administration and the spiritual teachings are all one whole, you know. It's all together. You can't have one part without. And we learn slowly. We humans learn very, very slowly. Now, you may learn fast, but I don't believe that, you see. I didn't learn fast. Some of this stuff, you know, came to me very slowly. Now, listen to this story, friends. This is the master talking, so don't find fault with it tonight. If you do, God's going to get you. You know that. This is what he said in a talk in the United States of America in 1912 in telling the life of Tahereh. Here's what he said, the master himself. When she saw Baha'u'llah, she changed completely, visibly, and looked within another world. The reins of volition were taken out of her hands by heavenly attraction. If she had not seen Baha'u'llah, no such effect will have been produced. She had read and heard the teachings of scriptures all her life, but the action and enkindlement were missing. Now, I ask you, how are you going to go into His presence in this life? That's a fair question, friends. I didn't make it up. Ask the question. But one of the best clues I know to it is the directions given when the Master's, you say this prayer to the Master's shrine when you go there, Tablets of Visitation. And all of you have been there. And this is what the guardian has translated for us. Whoso reciteth this prayer with lowliness and fervor will bring gladness and joy to the heart of this servant. It will be even as meeting him face to face. And don't play games with it. It's either a lie or it's a bold truth. I don't have to wait till the next life to meet Abba Baha. I can go into the presence of Baha'u'llah in this life too, if he says yes. The greatest understanding of prayer is in one little sentence. He doeth whatsoever he willeth, and he shall not be asked of his doings. The worth of any deed is conditioned upon its acceptance by God. God can't be godless, that's true. Now, if I told you my view, I think you're the chosen of God. You wouldn't be working here where you were. But all of us Baha'is are the chosen of God. And if you want to read why, read page 586 in Dawnbreakers. He lays it out. There it is. Go read it. But now let's look at this business of prayer. Let's look at it really hard. Do you know how to pray? Abba Baha said a lot of it depends on your concentration. He says it's like putting a glass between you and the sun, holding a ruby in the crucible, and the heat melts the ruby. Think about it. The word of God destroys the self of man in order that he may be recreated. I come into this faith with all kinds of ideas. And God's word destroys a lot of them because they're not true. They're not based on reality. My superstitions. When I was a kid growing up, I believed a rabbit foot brought me good luck. As much as you believe in anything you ever believed in your life, I really believed. Until one day, hunting, I realized it didn't help the rabbit a bit. You got to think about what you say. Well, you mean you're intelligent? But yes, I believe that. I believe if I carried a buckeye in my back pocket, I wouldn't get rheumatism. Of course, I was only 10, 12 years old. I'd have rheumatism anyway. You know, break a mirror. You're going to have 7 years of bad luck. Walk under a ladder. Here, black cat cross your path. Nail a horseshoe over your barn door. All this foolishness. That's no different from some religious beliefs we've got. If you really want to pray, you got to squat down in a way that breaks your knees, hurts your back, and you can't move for 5 days, and then God will hear you. That's stupid. Look, our teachings are easy. You know, I'm poking fun at some habits that I've seen around the place, but we like to make people in our image. God wants us made in His image. There's a big difference. We don't start out with one of the Tablets of Baha'u'llah, where he said, we must develop a taste for spiritual things. It's not natural. Some of the best people I've ever lived and worked with in my life didn't even believe in God. Certainly not a prayer. That's the truth. They were good people, but they were like a beautiful chandelier with no light in it. Doesn't work. Now, you believe in God, but the question is, what kind of God do you believe in? There are so many statements in Baha'i writings on this subject that it's hard to read you one that can condense into a moment's time what I wanted to say, but it's important at least you hear this one quote. In prayer, one must turn his face towards the sanctified reality of His Holiness Baha'u'llah, that reality which surrounds all the phenomena. During the time of prayer, His Holiness Baha'u'llah must be singly and alone the center towards whom all the faces are turned. If we wish to pray, we must have some object upon which to concentrate. If we turn to God, we must direct our heart to a certain center. If man worships God otherwise than through his manifestation, he must first form a conception of God, and that conception is created by his own mind. As the finite cannot comprehend the infinite, so God is not to be comprehended in this fashion. There is no connection between such a conception and the Supreme Being. The epitome of all worship is the worship of the attributes of Christ, not his personality. If a man wishes to know God, he must find him in a perfect mirror, Christ or Baha'u'llah. It is towards the inmost essence of these prophets, therefore, that the eye of every man of discernment must be directed. That's pretty powerful stuff, isn't it? Love thy neighbor as thyself. All of you are familiar with a talk Abdu'l-Bahá made in Paris Talks, I think, it's recorded, where he says there are four kinds of love. Are you familiar with that? God's love for himself, which caused him to create you. His love for man. Man's love for God. Man's love for man. But here's the fifth one. And it's not well known. This is the master. The fifth kind of love is the love of self, which directed to the ego will deprive the man of all true development. But if the love of self is a realization that he is a creature of God and must therefore attain to the station appointed to him, this love will be an uplifting one. And that is the only thing I've ever read in theology or anywhere else that made sense about Christ's statement, love thy neighbor as thyself. I didn't have any idea about what it meant. Now, friends, I'm about to make some strong statements, but my life, I base on it. I hope I go to the grave believing it. Till my last breath. Abdu'l-Bahá and the Guardian do not just interpret Baha'i writings. They interpret the writings of the Quran, the Gospel, and the Bible, all of it. If you want to know what Christ meant by something he said, find out what they interpreted that it meant. Find out what Abdu'l-Bahá says about it, or the Guardian says about it. And oftentimes a person is saying this and he's saying this. Take your choice. You see, this is serious business. We have no way to know some of the things that we have. While praying, it would be better to turn one's thoughts to the manifestation as he continues in the other world to be our means of contact with the Almighty. We can, however, pray to God directly himself. But it won't have the power that it has because the Word of God is endowed with the power of its own. How about that? Every time you say a prayer revealed by Baha'u'llah, it's amazing. Now, when I became a Baha'i, I really thought from my background that if you prayed enough, that would solve everything. It's not true. I have a statement here. And it's a statement that helps a person realize that there's more to prayer than just prayer. You must meditate on the options you have to choose. Oh, we don't like to choose. We want God to do it all. Oh, God, please be my bellhop and get it done for me. No, following prayer, you must meditate. Then you make a choice. And you must persevere with that choice. And if you persevere and it's God's will, he will open the door and confirm and assist you. Because prayers are only answered through action. And even if that action is wrong, God can use that purpose, that way, to show you what is right. These are spiritual laws. You can't get away from that. I don't know. I've already gone over the time they allotted me here. But that's two more quotes I have to read. The understanding of his words and the comprehension of the utterances of the birds of heaven are in no wise dependent upon human learning. They depend solely upon purity of heart, chastity of soul, and freedom of spirit. How about that? Not depending on how many degrees I got from some great university. I have to use my mind, but it's not enough. Some of the meanest people that ever breathed air, you see, were highly educated according to academic standards. Regarding what you were saying when you vote people for your local assembly, your national assembly. Well-trained mind, mature experience, recognizability, big deal. Hitler had that. But what were the two qualities he put in front of it? Steadfast devotion and unquestioning loyalty. If you have steadfast devotion, unquestioning loyalty, then you can use a well-trained mind, mature experience, and recognizability. Otherwise, you become a tool of the devil. Not that we believe in a devil, but you become a tool of your lower nature and others' lower nature. You follow me? This is serious business. Now, you folks here, sometimes I would imagine you sort of get used to being in this holy house of worship and sort of, gee, this comes, this goes, but it doesn't come and go. All these saintly souls are always here to help you. We believe in the Supreme Concourse. We're not worshiping our ancestors. We believe in these souls who've attained that kingdom. All the sciences and art dependent upon it. They're in this room tonight trying to help you find a closer energizing experience of the power of your Lord in your life. There's no limit to it. There's none. Mr. Caught in the Hand of the Cause used to travel some with Curtis Kelsey, and I used to enjoy watching. They'd go around and say, but Mr. Caught in used to say, you know, this quote of Baha'u'llah, increased my astonishment in me. He just loved that quote. And of course, Curtis was always talking about the Master. It was fun to watch them work together, you know. And all these great souls, I had this experience in my life, but all of them were praying people. The guardian told Mr. Iwas, even when you're talking to someone about the faith, while you're talking, be praying that something you say can touch the heart of the person you're talking to. Prayer, prayer, prayer. Now, friends, can I be candid? The house said be candid. Baha'u'llah says, what you say must be true. Well, the truth is the Word of God. Abu Baha says that. So memorize some of it. What you say must be true, and then it must be according to a capacity and timely. Does it not say that? The Master in a tablet says according to a person's temperament and taste. Now, can I ask you a question? You be honest. Unless you have a bigger ego than this temple, I'll tell you one thing. None of you know the capacity of anybody in here. And you sure do not know what's timely for anyone else. Only God Almighty knows it. He's the only one. He says, when you stand up to speak to somebody, turn your heart to Baha'u'llah, ask him to help you, look into the eyes of the friends and love them, and say what he tells you to say. Why? Because each of you has knowledge of the Word of God. And you had experience. Each one of you have. You have. But you don't know how to use it with this person. You don't have that. Well, sure, you know, Justin's sitting there. He knows all these books. So what? He doesn't know what in that book to say to Becky here. You see, he doesn't know that. Only Baha'u'llah knows what that soul needs to hear, right? Now, if you're begging him, Baha'u'llah, cause me to say, from my experience and knowledge, something can touch the heart of this person to attract them to Baha'u'llah, then I've done my job. Suppose Abu Baha's back here in this cornerstone room. Really and truly, and you brought your friend tonight. All you want to do, all you're after doing, is trying to convince your friend, and you're going to go with her, to go back there to that little cornerstone room and introduce her to Abu Baha. Your work's over when that happens. That's all you got to do. Then it's between her and Abu Baha. When you go to a fireside where you're happy, you know the spirit of Baha'u'llah is there. This is a happy, joyous religion. This is not a long-faced religion. Even the martyrs went to their death dancing and clapping and shouting for joy. Now, you can't do that if you don't love God. Now, I know all of you know these things. Mr. Sears, that wonderful hand of the cause, told me, he said, Jack, you can't tell a Baha'i anything they don't already know. You've just got to try and encourage them to do what they already know to do. But in all sincerity, we don't pray enough, in my humble opinion. There's a statement of the Master's where he says, imagine yourself in the presence of God. If you see him not, verily he seeth you. This is real. It's so real, and it's all we're going to take with us to the next world. Now, there's a statement of the Master's, of the Guardians, and you read it in Dawn of a New Day. I have it here. I just don't have time to look it up in my notes. In Dawn of a New Day, the Guardian says this, the only souls you will be able to commune with in the next world are those souls that you have an unselfish love for. And you're not going to fake that, friends. You either love people or you don't love people. And you can't love God and not love people. And some people are not unlovable, and you can't love them without his help. You have to be a submissive servant. I think Americans particularly would love to follow Abu Baha if his title was boss and not servant. I don't mean that disrespectfully, but we admire people on top. And Abu Baha, when he was speaking at the Salvation Army in London, England, he said, I've been poor all my life. I consider myself one of you. I got the talk right here. Rich in the things of God. How can you talk about a Baha'u'llah if you hadn't talked to him? And every day we struggle with that because we have this lower nature pulling us this way, that way, the other way. Somehow, we Baha'is have to find a way to overcome ourselves and do the work the House of Justice has asked us to do. And they put it in the most simple language. They said, make your mark. What do you think that means? What do you think it means to make your mark? Any ideas on that? This man came to see Abu Baha walking on the beach. And this story is an anecdote told to me by my old friend Curtis Kelsey. I wasn't there, and this is what Curtis saw and recorded. He said, this man, I can certainly identify with the way the man felt. He said to the Master, Master, I would like to be a member of the Baha'is, but my sins are more numerous than the sand on this seashore. They were walking along the Mediterranean Sea. And the Master said, if you will humble yourself, as this sand has done itself, then the ocean of God's covenant will wash you as clean as this sand. That's a beautiful thought to me. You know, it's the kind of thought that just lifts your soul high. Mrs. Kadem did a wonderful thing for us, and I want to pay tribute to her. She put in the appendix section of her book a letter that Mr. and Mrs. Sears had written to Mr. Kadem when he was ill. And it's a letter of Shoghi Effendi to Doris Skinner. And I suggest it's the only place, as far as I know, that's in Baha'i writings. We wrote to the House of Justice, INSA did, to be sure it was authentic. It is. And in that letter, the Guardian says, look, he teaches you in this letter how to pray for someone that you may be losing. In this case, it was Doris's mother. And he said, the essential is not your high spirituality, your motive to know God's will and to accept it. After everything else is gone, you still can turn to God in prayer. I refer you to it. I have it here. I don't have time to look it up. But you look it up in her book. It's in the library in there. In the back. It's the only place I know we have that. But it's a wonderful thing because many people say, well, I can't pray because I'm not worthy. Well, if you wait till you get worthy, you'll never pray. I was a brand new Baha'i and I had that experience. I didn't feel worth it all being a Baha'i. And I had a friend who became Baha'i about the same time I did. We were praying and going to these firesides. And I had a dream one night. And Abu Baha was with my friend in a garden and he was embracing him. My friend was so happy. And I was standing back here looking at him. And I wanted so badly to be embraced by Abu Baha. And I felt dirty. I felt unclean. And I knew from looking at Abu Baha, he was the most pure. He was the essence of purity. I couldn't touch him in my dream. I remembered still after all these years, 40 years ago. I felt paralyzed. This arm, I couldn't move it in my dream. I was paralyzed because I couldn't touch him being as dirty as I felt. And he's so pure. And even in the dream, I realized if I didn't make an effort to touch him in the condition I was in, I'd never touch him. And the moment the thought hit my mind in my dream, I was free, and I went, and I reached out, and the Master embraced me, kissed me on both cheeks. Or I wouldn't be here. I think prayer is like that. We're not worthy to commune with God. We're spiritual beings, but we have so many failings. But Abu Baha said, don't look at your failings. And if you will use these prayers and say these prayers, you can touch the spirit of the Master and Baha'u'llah and the Guardian and the Bab. And if you touch it, it will change your life. It will free you from everything you're attached to and can bring you the happiness that nothing in the world can bring it. Because you're in touch with what you were created for, to know Him and to worship Him. So I want to close with one simple idea. And I'm really serious about this. Promise yourself that you will pray for everybody you're working with by name. You'll pray for every member of your LSA by name. Don't just say, oh Lord, I'm praying for my LSA. Pray for those folks that are struggling. Pray for your mother and father every morning, every time you say a prayer. And pray for your NSA, friends. We need it. I mean, we've got 9 nice folks on the NSA, but we're all weak just like you. And I'm serious. We need your prayers. We're going to the most difficult time in the transition that's ever been on this planet. And we have to be strong. We have to be firm in this covenant. And we have to really love each other. You can't fake it. You have to love each other so much that if the chips are down, you give your life for your brother or your sister. The world is changing quickly. We're on the threshold of a global civilization. And this faith in this country has been chosen by Abu Baha to lead the world spiritually. And with all humility that I can muster, I just beg you to think, you're the only people here Baha'u'llah's got to work with. You are blessed people. He wouldn't have chosen you. This is a blessed place. A hand of the cause is buried right over here in a cemetery. If you can't focus on the spirit here, go over there. I was out in Tucson a year. We went to Mr. Sears' grave every 2 weeks. A whole bunch of us had prayers. The Guardian wrote way back in the 30s, have firesides. And then he said, have prayer meetings. Because it creates love and fellowship amongst the friends. Have these prayer meetings. Pray. We had prayer meetings in the little town I live in for a year. because everybody in the community had these problems. We'd meet every Wednesday night because that was prayer meeting night in the culture of the place I live. We have a wonderful lady who's in our community, a knight of Baha'u'llah, Gail Kirwan, and she would go around and ask each one of us, what do you want us to pray for tonight? Who do you want us to pray for? What do you want to pray for? And she'd keep a list of it, keep it down. And then we'd pray till everybody just sort of unanimously felt we've prayed enough. And in time, more people began to join the prayer book. Some were not even Baha'i. And every Wednesday night we'd come back and she would say, okay, now what has happened for this person you asked us to pray for since last Wednesday night? And we'd all give an updated report on what's happened in that person or this incident or what they were praying for. So we had a full updated record of what had happened, and then we had more prayers. At the end of the year, every problem we had at the beginning of the year had been resolved. And we have a record of it. The one thing that we all learned, we learned to love each other so much because we knew the burdens each of us was carrying. We learned the struggle, each of us, and we wouldn't have done it. We would have never had it had we not been praying for each other. We found out how struggling and how hard it is for Baha'is to be Baha'is. And you love them. So I suggest, you know, if any of you are interested in that type of thing, you have your own prayer meetings. It creates love between you, and pray for each other and pray for your institutions. And I thank you for your kindness coming tonight. And I would make a quick suggestion. If any of you want to go into this subject deeply, there's a book, a pioneer of South America, and Helen Hornsby put together a book called Lights of Guidance. And it has a section in it on prayer. There are many of the Guardian's letters that are recorded there that's not recorded anywhere else. And you can gain some insight from some of those letters that just have, you know, a quick glimpse of this and a glimpse of that. And one final thought in my heart, it's almost as if God is telling me to say it. I'm not that superstitious, but Abu Baha says that you have spiritual faculties. And whatever you focus them on, that's what they'll reflect. If you focus them on worldly things, that's what they will reflect. You meditate on material things, that's what they'll reflect. You meditate on heavenly things, that's what they'll reflect. Turn them to heavenly things, that's within your choice, to your last breath. God bless you and thank you for coming tonight. And I hope somehow, maybe I said something to just move you toward thinking more about this wonderful prayers and meditations that the Guardian gave us and the prayer books. And loving each other in a more real way. Otherwise, religion has no meaning. If you say you love God and don't love this person, Christ Himself said you're a liar and the truth is not in you. And you can't make yourself love people. Some, yes, but not everybody. But if you love Baha'u'llah and are in touch with Him, He can make you love people. I feel like some of these TV ministers, God forgive me, but you know, I get another thing coming in. Millie Collins, if you're in this room, thank you. She just put this in my mind, so here it goes. When we met with the House of Justice, we had serious problems. You know that. We wouldn't have been permitted by the House to go there. But in their kindness to us and in our need, they let us go. And one of the members of the House said, and I'm not breaking confidentiality, I wouldn't tell it. He told us a story that I share with you by Millie Collins. She had a very hard time when she got elected to this particular National Spiritual Assembly because she was just a housewife, she felt. And look at these great warriors that were on that assembly, you know, Horace Holley, you know, and Paul Haney, and Dorothy Baker, Leroy Iwas, all these spiritual giants. And here was Millie. And she felt so intimidated she'd come and say nothing at a meeting. So she begged Baha'u'llah, oh Baha'u'llah, please help me. And she had a dream. In her dream, she was seated at the table with her colleagues. And this great light shone out of heaven down in the middle of the table. And the only way she could look and see any member of that assembly was to see that woman or that man through the light of the love of Baha'u'llah. That's the only way she could see him. It changed her life. When she died, the Guardian said she was a saint. Appointed her a full year before anyone even knew about it. Well, she started out intimidated by other strong people. Don't be afraid of anybody but God. That's good advice. Raise your banner, use your talent, your ability, and pray and pray and pray. And so I close with my next to the last thought. I said the other one was, but this is it. I met an old African-American preacher. I was a new Baha'i back up in the hills of Kentucky. And some of these young warrior Baha'is were talking about free will and predestination and arguing philosophy and theology, and asked him what he thought about it. And I leave this thought with you, those of you who have the heart for it. He said, all I know is you've got to work so hard as if it all depends on you. And pray so hard as if it all depends on God. And that's good advice, because that is exactly the life of Shoghi Effendi. Allahu Akbar.
You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i faith, call 1-800-22-UNITE. Or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. Look on the internet at www.baha'i.org for the international site, or www.baha'i.us for the U.S. site. Remember that Baha'i is B-A-H-A-I. In Florida, our website is www.emeraldcoastbahais.org. emeraldcoastbahais.org. If you'd like to look up other Baha'i podcasts, go to our website, emeraldcoastbahais.org. At the bottom are links to other Baha'i podcasts. I'm Ron Fraser. You can email me at panhandlebahais@aol.com. Thanks for listening.